Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hello, Homo sapiens listeners. This is a little extra treat for you all. We've done a special episode teaming up with the podcast Talk Art, which is a brilliant podcast about art hosted by Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond. So we've done a Homo sapiens meets Talk Art episode where we kind of fuse the two things, and the topic is basically queer art. If you haven't listened to Talk Art before, it's really popular. They talk to all different sorts of people about art, like they've talked to Stephen Fry, Grayson Perry, Billy Porter, Tracy Emin, and the reason they started it was to demystify art, and I am all for that. So part one of the episode is over on Talk Art's feed, so go over there and have a listen. And part two is here on our feed, so you can listen to the entire episode if you straddle the two feeds. In the first part of our chat, we're all talking about the artists that have shaped and influenced us. So people like Madonna, David Hockney, Andy Warhol. This part on our feed is part two, where we're discussing the queer art movement and we discuss all the art that we have in our homes. Most of mine's from eBay. And we answer the famous Talk Art question, which is, what piece of art would we steal in an art heist? We had so much fun recording this episode. So have a listen and check out all Talk Art's other episodes. They're brilliant.
Who do you think the artists of today that are queer and having a big impact on culture?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Yeah, well done. I don't know that I have the answer to that.
But I was thinking about who I like now. And there's this guy called Liam Buckley who is not queer, but he came to my attention because he had a bit of a queer aesthetic that made me think of David Hockney. He's based in Hackney Wick. And he does these kind of very simple paintings that are very Hockney-esque of like,
Cool.
They're really cool, aren't they?
Yeah.
I just think he's really interesting.
It's actually very current though, because there's a big move at the moment for figuration. And it says that he's influenced by McDonald's, the Beatles and Picasso. I love that.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. And it's kind of demystifying, you know, in the same way. Like, I always think people who are making art who are not indulging the more pretentious side of art just really interests me, because it feels a bit more pure, you know. And there's this amazing guy on eBay who I think is probably deliberately hidden, but like, he makes fakes of stuff on eBay.
I love that.
And like, so he'll say like, this is a John Cocteau sketch and stuff, and it's so fucking clearly not. One, because it's $3.99, and two, because there's four exactly the same. But I sort of love it, because I think there's something quite fun in playing with that, the way that people will change their attitude to something based on where they think it's from, you know what
true.
I mean, and be like, oh goodness,
I think that's such an interesting thing, because I've got an Andy Warhol Marilyn. And the thing is, it's that the man who was, do you know the story, but the man who was the screen printer for Andy Warhol, like,
yeah,
after Andy Warhol died, he still made some, like, he churned a few out for a bit of extra cash, one of which is one of the ones I've got. So
what, and claiming they were made within his lifetime, or did he name them after Andy Warhol?
I'm not sure if he fessed up or it was discovered later, or. But it's sort of the thing, he's basically saying they're the same things because they're the same screen prints that came from this thing, and he's the man who oversaw it, but he sold some after, you know, I mean, he kept, I guess they were just sort of lying around. And so it's an interesting thing. So it technically is a Warhol, of course, because Andy Warhol designed the whole thing, but actually it's not sort of sanctioned as the proper one. It still is a little bit, but there's a sort of, you know, that kind of, well, you guys, I'm sure know that sort of artistic hierarchy / snobbery in terms of whatever, when and what the provenance of certain artworks and all that stuff. So I just think it's really interesting though, because it's so ridiculous. I've actually got an Andy Warhol, it's a Marilyn, in my study in the city. And I got it, interesting, I got it in, what's that place called? Kansas City.
It was on an auction
for the opening of an LGBT, the first ever LGBT center in Kansas City, opened by that country and Western star who got sort of totally shut down when she came out. I can't remember her name right now, but that was, I bought that at that auction.
Boys, you asked us about queer artists in the future, but who for you are those people?
Well, I think, well, there's a whole group of queer art movement that's happening in New York and Brooklyn. But there's someone, when I was thinking about this earlier, and I thought there's someone who's really done something incredible is Kehinde Wiley, who was the first man of color, black man, to ever paint a presidential portrait, but also he's openly gay. So historically, to be chosen to paint that portrait of Barack Obama when Amy Sherrill did the one of Michelle Obama, that was a massive moment in, you know, art history, queer history, black history for him to have done that.
I'm just looking now. Incredible.
He's also just done a public sculpture of a young black man in sort of Nike trainers sitting on the back of a horse that they put into Times Square. And it's now gone to, I want to say Chicago, but I can't quite remember. But it's gone to like a Confederate kind of, what do you call it? Like next to all the Confederate statues. So it's this kind of contemporary sculpture that's now going to be, you know, alongside all the ones from history. So it's a really important sculpture that he's made.
Yeah. But we've been doing so much research on all this, and there's lots of incredible like photographers that there's a lesbian photographer, proudly lesbian photographer, called Catherine Opie, who actually, one of her favorite images of mine is of Justin Vivian Bond. Have you seen this image where they're facing out, looking at us, and it's a very bold, a brightly colored background, and there was a series of them, and Catherine Opie is very proudly lesbian, and she really captures like the whole very butch lesbian community and the lesbian bikers, and then she really is heavily involved in kind of archiving and showing all the different sides of what it is to be queer and margins within the margins. She's a really, really important queer photographer. But I just, when I saw that, you know, you'd interviewed Justin Vivian Bond, I was like, yeah, this is a really good person for you guys to be aware of, and for listeners to be aware of.
Actually, Justin's doing these great things right now. You know, she paints as well, and she has done various sort of art projects, actually, but she's doing a thing right now where she does eyes, all these different people's eyes, or little watercolors, and they're really mesmerizing. She's having an exhibition in Provincetown, but she's been showing them in her on her Instagram. But they're just little watercolors of eyes, but they are so incredibly capture a person that you know. They're usually of famous people that you know.
Yeah. She, again, is
amazing. She's an incredible performer.
Activist, trailblazer, performer, everything. Just like really important.
And also there's a painter called Louis Rotino who's incredible. And then Doron Lamberg. There's a whole like gang. We've actually interviewed a few of them on our show. Salmon Tor. And actually I was wrong. It was Richmond, Virginia, which is where Kehinde Wiley's sculpture is, not Chicago. I've just checked because I don't like to get things wrong.
No, you don't.
What do you both live with? Do you live with artworks or postcards or posters or anything that you love?
Yeah, I've got stuff around the house. Like I was thinking about how I went to this house, like this junk shop in somewhere like near my parents' house out near like Hampton. And I went in and there was this amazing painting on the wall that was like a really simple landscape done in like, they'd represented like the cliffs of Dover maybe, with three shapes, and it was beautiful. And I remember I bought that painting, and it was by this guy where they'd emptied his whole house. And he was obviously just a sort of artist for fun. And they were selling all his furniture and stuff. And I got the chair that actually I'm sitting on from his house as well. But I wish I'd bought more, because it's the most incredible painting that people always comment on. And there were two there. And I was like, oh, maybe I should get both, but I didn't. What else have I got? I've got one of the, so you know that guy who fakes thing on the eBay? He did one of Roberto Chilida. Do you know him? So he did a fake one of those. So no. I have one of those that I don't sell. I don't tell people is real. And there's this amazing magazine called Derrière le Miroir. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So it's like a French magazine from the 70s. And they used to get really amazing artists like Raoul Ubach and Chilida as well.
Is it from a Calder title? Because I think Calder. The title Derrière le Miroir is actually
from an Alexander Calder.
Okay, maybe that's it. Well, they used to get incredible artists to do a centerfold each week in their thing. So you'd get an amazing piece of art, but for a really small amount of money. So that was kind of my route into how I could get works of people I loved, but obviously I couldn't afford the real thing. So I've got loads of things like that around the house.
That's interesting. There's a thing like that my friend Cynthia Rowley and Bill Powers, he's got a gallery called The Half Gallery.
Yeah, I love that.
In New York. Yeah. They have a thing, a sort of an online thing. What's it called? Where they would do sort of small collections. Or you don't call it collections.
Yeah, they make prints, don't they? They sell prints, I think.
Yes. But limited editions of by really interesting people.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got one by what's his name who lived in the Chelsea Hotel and died.
Robert Mapplethorpe.
But anyway, I really love that idea of actually people thinking, oh, let's make something that's more. It's like when those designers do collections for what was that place? H&M. Do you remember they did a series of collections with Margiela? Versace and stuff like that. And I really loved that. I thought,
everyone was like fighting in the aisles.
Yeah, people were punching each other.
The artist I work with, Catherine Bernhardt, she made a functional beanbag chair that you can sit on with one of her paintings on it for that company. I know what it was called. It was called Exhibition A.
Do you know? Do you know my friend David Renfrey?
Yes, I know David Renfrey.
They used to live in the Chelsea, and he painted me a few times, and actually did a he did. I've got in our house a really beautiful sort of huge watercolor of me and my dog Honey, my dog who died, and David painted her a lot. Actually, in this very house, he said that we'd have these big party weekends, and he'd be the only one up, and Honey, the two of them would sort of spend time together in the mornings while we were all hungover, and so he did all these sketches and all these paintings of her, and he wrote a book about people and their dogs. It was just beautiful. And they does these amazing things of dancers. And he used to paint me in the Chelsea Hotel. And I loved it because it was sort of like going to therapy. He chatted to you and you just chatted about stuff for hours whilst he painted or sketched.
Yeah, but the history of that hotel as well. I mean, that's incredible.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, really incredible. I mean, it's so weird now because the awful thing is I think the money ran out for the hotel. So it's just sort of standing there now.
Yeah, it is. Whoa. Scaffolding all over it. Yeah. I just remember reading Patti Smith's book, Just Kids, about her and Robert Mapplethorpe. And
yes, we had Patti on our podcast.
Yeah, it was amazing. I love
that interview. She was talking about that being at the Chelsea.
Yeah, and interesting how she was
she's a darling.
She was almost like she encouraged Robert not to work so he could pursue his art, and she would work for the pair of them. And the way that they supported each other as artists was incredible. And
Paying the rent on time.
Paying the rent on time. One thing that I loved about her, and Alan, you obviously know her really well, but I'd never met her before. But the fact that she is so, she's so allegedly cool, she embodies all these things that people perceive as cool. But actually, she was the one paying the bills. She is, she wanted to support Robert. She went and she had a proper job. And she's really candid about things like she said, because she did that massive song with what's his name, massive American artist, the one that made
Bruce Springsteen,
and she said, oh, I'd love to write songs like Bruce Springsteen, I just can't. Her candor and unpretentiousness was amazing. It was incredible to hear about those times with her and Robert just living in this tiny room. It's amazing.
It was also interesting the idea of the fact they were a couple, and then how he was gay but he couldn't sort of be that at that time.
Well, but then, really, we were talking about that, weren't we? Because then maybe he was bisexual. And
she said that amazing thing that she said that she, in those days, there wasn't really the notion that someone who seemed straight could be gay.
Yeah,
wasn't
exactly.
really a thing.
Yeah.
And so she kept saying, you know, she goes, you know, Robert, he was just like a guy at high school. Yeah. That's what she kept saying. And I didn't quite understand what it meant. And then she explained to me that gay men in those days would be either hidden and completely closeted or big flaming flamboyant sort of, you know, stereotypes. I guess you had to show that to sort of make people understand but the idea of a sort of straight acting, as that crazy phrase is, that didn't exist.
No.
In those days.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? I was remembering a story about New York just because we were talking about it. We had Nikki Haslam came on the podcast and he was talking about living in New York around the Warhol times. He claimed that he discovered Andy Warhol. Well, actually, sorry.
He didn't help his hair out, did he? He was in wigs the whole time. He didn't do him any favours.
Andy Warhol actually says that Nikki discovered him in his autobiography. So,
maybe that's where the fright wig came from.
Maybe. But he employed Andy as an illustrator on Vogue. So he used to get Andy to do all these drawings. Oh. That was one of Andy's first gigs. And Nikki said that the amount of Warhols they used to just sweep up off the desk and throw in the bin every week.
Oh my God.
It's just chilling.
Yeah, because he used to paint like shoes and jewelry and
yes.
All the fashion stuff. Yeah, yeah, totally.
We, of course, Russell, I don't know if you remember, we met Russell and I met in a bathhouse.
History Boys.
No, we met in a bathhouse.
It wasn't. Did you? No, it was actually the Russian
bath.
Sorry, it wasn't the bathhouse that was like dimly lit and it's predominantly for a homosexual crowd. This was a very mixed community, Adam, before rumors.
Not what I heard.
We did meet.
We did meet in our towels.
That's true. And then we hung out. Yeah, I was doing the History Boys. And we hung out loads. And
yes.
I met your minder, Carmine, who was a very nice man.
Carmine. Oh, I know. A little darling.
We went to Broadway Bears together.
That's right. And then I remember...
Broadway Bears.
Oh, it's a great thing. It's a sort of a fundraiser that Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, this great sort of organization that raises all this money. And they have a thing called Broadway Bears once a year, where it's basically this evening of all these dance routines. There's a theme every year, but basically all these stunning people basically take their clothes off.
In underwear.
It's incredible.
I went on in gold lame underwear at the end, and I remember I was dancing on stage and they put like dollar bills in your knickknacks just to like raise money for charity. And this guy put his finger up my bum. And I remember feeling like,
Alan Cumming.
But then he put $20.
Yeah, hope that was $20.
In my knickknacks. So I was like, oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's like, whoa, I'm an actor. I'm a
It's super intense.
That.
Yeah, but they do that thing. It's called rotation or something, and everyone goes out and you basically just dance and people, and you're like, it's like being a go-go boy or a girl, and you go out and and you just, people put money in you and they stuff it down your jockstrap or whatever you're wearing. I think it's a very interesting and salutary experience to go through.
I changed my life.
Sounds like a sort of fraternity, like frat party initiation ceremony.
Initiation or something. Yeah.
Is that called hazing?
And backstage is such fun because everybody's getting painted in glitter and all these funny colours and everything like that. I took some great photos backstage. It's such an amazing... I wonder if you agree with this, Russell Tovey, that compared to working in the West End, the sense of community and sort of... Of sort of 100%. Warmth and sort of friendship between the companies in Broadway is incredibly different, isn't it?
But do you know what I put that down to is that we have theatre here, but we don't have a theatre community. We don't have the place where everyone hangs out. You do a play here, you go home. No one really knows what everyone else is doing. Whereas in New York, they know everything. They and what it is that there is such a fan base for Broadway (parenthesis) that people will go and see the shows that have been panned, and they will go and see the shows that are the hits, so they can talk about it at dinner. And the whole feeling of community there, I think, comes from, again, going back to it, the AIDS epidemic and the fact that the community was so brought together from all over America or from all over the world, and they were brought to this little town, this little community, and it was decimated, and everyone clubbed together, and you had Broadway Fights AIDS, Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. You had all these people rallying and creating these supportive networks for all of these people, that it created this really strong, solid, loyal community to each other. And I was working with this producer recently who told me this story, and he was working in casting during the whole AIDS epidemic. And the tragedy was is that they would be checking dancers and actors for roles in the chorus line of separate shows, and it would come back and say, oh, he's visiting family. Oh, he's gone away for the summer. And they were all euphemisms for he's gone home to die, he's gone away, he's dying. And everybody knew what they were, but no one was like, he's got AIDS, he's dying. But he's like, gone to visit family, would come back from the agent. And you're like, that is, I'm saying it now, I've got like goosebumps. That was, it's an unbearable euphemism to get back. And he said it was just like, it just ripped through. And we had that definitely in the UK, but that sense of community, that sense, that's my dog growling over there.
Sounds like
the
a
sense of community,
bike.
The sense of like, oh, that's a motorbike as well. He's on the motorbike now. That sense of like, that sense of just like activism feels like it really bound Broadway together.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And I, you know, it's so interesting because that when I was in, you know, you were doing your play in London and in New York, and I was doing Endgame at the Old Vic, and I sort of felt that thing of like, where does everyone go? Where is everyone going? What's happening afterwards? You know, where's that? And it just wasn't. I mean, I know London is an earlier town; it closes earlier, and so I had to make my peace with that. When you think about it, swinging London, but actually, who do you have to fuck to find a drink after midnight, unless you go to one of those clubs?
I think that's changed though. I think even in the early 2000s it was still a bit later because loads of the nightclubs are gone.
Yes. I mean, it's got worse.
Like, yeah, so many queer and gay nightclubs have gone, and they're the ones that used to be open.
Yeah, the queer spaces.
So
Robert, do you feel like that moving to Margate is the new East London, and there is a queer bubble down there of?
I think it's slightly different in the sense that, I mean, people do call it Shoreditch by the Sea and all that. But the truth is, I think I don't think it's going to become like Hackney did in the regeneration sense, only because it is just that tiny bit too far away for people to commute from, if you know what I mean. But I think the thing that I have found is a community here of a lot of queer people have moved here. And there is a community which I've never experienced in my life, which is super, super special. And, you know, Margate Pride was just incredible because even though we weren't allowed to do the march due to COVID, we still had this kind of like big collaboration between everyone. So there was a photographer here called Elisa who photographed maybe like 45 people in a week, you know, all queer people. And then they put them up in windows around the town. And then it became a kind of walk that all the visitors like did to, you know, to sort of still celebrate Pride. And there were lots of initiatives like that. But the nice thing is the young kids, because there's loads of kids here who have gay parents and they're all growing up, you know, celebrating Pride from the age of like 3, 4, 5. And there was a big sort of family event on Saturday in one of the bandstands kind of outdoors. And they had to limit numbers and all that stuff. But, you know, it was just so sweet to see all these kids like dancing and celebrating and I don't know, and the rainbow. And it felt really sweet, actually. So I really like living here. I feel very like I can be myself. And
I loved it when I went for Christmas. I just thought it was such, I love that kind of mixture of, you know, it's why I used to like living in Islington in sort of the late 90s. I really liked that mixture of socioeconomic and racial groups. And I felt that's what Margate felt to me, for me too. It was like a great sort of sense of community I really, really enjoyed myself.
And actually, your visit was like talk of the town. So many people told me that they saw you or that heard that they saw you. That's and then you so ended nice. Up in the local newspaper. It was very sweet. So we were very proud to have you here. And actually, weren't you filming in Kent?
Yes.
Because I loved your TV show, Back to Life, that you were the director.
Isn't it great?
And didn't you film that like down the road?
Yeah, we filmed it in Dungeness and Hythe. And we, because I made it, so the writer and star was Daisy Haggard, and she, you know, her and I sat down and she was like, it was a show for BBC Three, which they don't have a lot of money to spend. And she was like, I want to make like an American indie movie like Winter's Bone. And I was like, interesting, for 12 quid, and we're going to have to shoot it within the M25. And then I was like, actually, you know, there is Dungeness, like that kind of looks like Outback America. And if we could persuade everyone to go down there to film, you get those kind of open vistas like in an American indie movie. So we went and shot stuff there. And then we sort of based a few bits. We found Hythe looks like suburbia, but is on the sea. So it's not that kind of cute idea of seaside. It's like suburban semis on the beach. And I was like, well, that looks a little bit like Streatham. So if we filmed most of
it's
in
quite
Streatham,
it's quite similar to Palm Bay here,
really,
and even Westgate and places like that. Yeah. And when I saw that show, I was just moving to Margate, or it was around that time. I think I was still living half in London, half here. And I remember watching it, and I felt like I was sort of learning about Kent through your show. So it was quite strange because there were really beautiful shots of. And it made me think a bit of Derek Jarman too, because of Dungeness.
Yeah, because we got like free pass to film on the Dungeness estate, where you're allowed behind the gates and stuff. And we saw Derek Jarman's house and things. And that's when they were just beginning the campaign to save the house and the garden, which is done.
And actually, he was another one, wasn't he? Because in the 80s, I think I learned so much about art through the Pet Shop Boys music videos. Do you know what I mean? That he made, you know, before I saw his actual films and read the book and all those things. But like, I don't know, I think he was so important, and the whole Channel 4 like culture of the 80s. But I love Derek Jarman.
They saved his house, didn't they, though?
Got it in the end.
Yes, sure. They did. Yes.
Prospect Cottage.
Thank God.
Yes.
Prospect Cottage.
Yeah, it's stunning. That garden.
You were talking about Islington, Alan. Did you ever go and stand outside Joe Orton and Kenneth Halliwell's house on Knoll Road?
Yes. Yes, I did.
But they've got a blue plaque up there, and I find myself just standing opposite, just staring up, thinking, wow, what happened in that little flat? Do you guys know the story of that?
What went on?
You also dragged me there, Russell. And when you told me the story, which he'll do right now, I was kind of appalled. I was like...
Joe Orton and Kenneth Halliwell met at college, and they were like... They became lovers, but they never told anyone that they were lovers, and they shared this little flat. And what they did was they had this shared passion for collage, and they loved collage. And they would go to a local library, and I think there's one in Archway and one in Holloway, and they would take books from there. They would take pages out of the books, and they would also deface them with different descriptions of what the book was about. So then in the background, it'd be like a book by Roald Dahl, for example, and they would write something else that wasn't, not Roald Dahl, it's a bit later, but written by, I don't know, Rudyard Kipling. And then they would write something else on the back to the Jungle Book that was quite had innuendo and sexuality in it. So people would then get these books off the shelf and walk to the front and be like, what the hell is this? And they would deface the front. But the images they took from the inside, they collaged the inside of the flat completely in all these photographic things from all these books that they tore the pages out of, which they then got caught for, sent to prison for 6 months each, separate prisons. In prison, Joe Orton completely thrived, had the time of his life, loved it, came out inspired. Kenneth Halliwell got completely broken in prison, came out a completely different person. They came out, Joe Orton became a superstar comedy theatre writer. Kenneth Halliwell became this struggling, very... embittered actor who was at home. And then there was at one point where Joe was about to go and meet the Beatles, because he was going to go and shoot a movie for the Beatles and write the script for them. And Kenneth Halliwell had a moment of rage and bludgeoned him to death with his Evening Standard Award. And they were there and then killed himself. And it wasn't until the driver arrived the next morning to come up and pick up Joe Orton that they realised that this had all gone on in this little flat. And this whole kind of like...
It was that bit where I was like,
What?
When I heard, I was
he killed him with his Evening Standard Award.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, seriously, he there's a film him. In this. I think you two need to play
there is a film.
There is.
There's a great film.
Alan Cumming and Russell Tovey.
I'd be Alfred Molina and you'd be Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman. God. Chris, how did you start making films and things? Because I never realised you were a film director until I saw Back to Life.
How did I start? I started out as a music video director. And I did lots of music videos, which is how I met Will Young, actually. And then because I directed lots of his videos. And then that's how we started this podcast, in fact. And that's actually how I met you, Russell. Do you remember we met with Will once? You came to my office when we were doing a video where Will was going to be a pregnant man. And we had to do this fitting for Will to have a pregnant belly put on, which was deeply strange. Not for the pregnancy, really. Just the whole thing was strange.
Why were you there, Russ? Were you in the video?
No. I mean, we used to hang out for a while. We were mates for a while, yes.
Yeah, so I did lots of music videos. And then because of that, I did lots of videos for Lily Allen. And they were sort of funny. So then I got asked to do comedy stuff, which is how I ended up doing Back to Life. So, and I always wanted to go that way anyway. My dad was a fashion photographer, so I liked visual things, but I knew I wanted to tell stories. So that's how I ended up there.
And the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. We ask every guest that comes on, if we can do the talk art normalities, is that if you could do an art heist, if you two could own any work of art in the world from any museum or anybody's collection, what would it be and why?
I would steal the Jeff Koons dog. You know, the big, enormous West Highland Terrier, the puppy.
But the puppy.
I would steal that. Because I saw it, first of all, covered
with
in flowers.
Covered in
I
flowers.
Saw it at the Guggenheim in Bilbao, like years, decades. Where is it now? Is it, it's not permanently there, is it? No. I think that's where it was first done
for.
There's
a few of them in different places.
There? Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I don't want it so much now then.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's massive.
It's an addition, it's like, maybe of three.
It's like, because there's a place, as I look out onto this meadow that I'm looking out on, my trampoline is on one side. And the sort of Anthony, who cuts our grass, he does the sort of two circles, one for the trampoline and another circle as though there's going to be something else. And then a path up the thing. So it looks like a cock and two gigantic balls I look out on. And I have always wanted to get something like to go in that second circle opposite the trampoline. And one of Jeff Koons' puppies would be absolutely fabulous.
I worked with a print company called Counter Editions, and we made a print with Jürgen Teller which details that puppy, but it has Stephanie Seymour like reclining just on the top of its head, so she's like all the way up on this giant puppy, and that could be you, Alan. Like, you could just
right.
recline. It would be so glamorous.
Recline on
when
top
it's
of
in
my
full
puppy.
Bloom.
That'd be great.
I would.
That sounds sexual. What about you, Christopher?
I think if I had to do a heist of something, it would probably be there's on eBay, there's someone who sells Chilida paintings.
Well, like real ones.
And there's one I want.
I love the fact that you buy your art from eBay. That is like your go-to art, art
but
place.
They're probably like, it would be hysterical for you two to have a look because you'd be like, this person is not a real seller, don't touch it. But there's one on there that's really expensive, and I would steal that so that I could have it rather than it sitting in my watch list.
Very nice.
Is it expensive?
I think it's about 12 grand.
Oh, wow. That is expensive.
Okay. Oh, right, okay.
Why is he selling that on eBay? That's crazy. How interesting.
Well, it's weird, isn't it?
Maybe
don't know.
Maybe he doesn't realise that he could get... Maybe it's worth more than that. I want to look into this.
Do you think?
Maybe it's
a fake.
That's true.
Or maybe it's no provenance. I mean, if it says after, if you have the word after before any of the artworks, it means it was made after the artist's lifetime, or they can't accredit it to the artist. Yeah. They have to call it after, even though it may be the artist, but there's no provenance.
See, this is why it's good we had this conversation.
When I was growing up, my mum had a Lowry in our house that was a painting that obviously wasn't real, but it was made, I just found out the other day, it's made by a 95-year-old like woman in Reading. I mean, I love her. Who was she? She liked a really good Lowry.
There's a movie there. That's another part for you, Alan.
You two could team up on this.
Right. I'm all over it. I'm going to buy the rights.
the other question we ask every guest on Talk Art is, what is your favourite colour?
Oh. Yellow.
Oh, that's nice. How comes? Do you know why?
That's nice.
I love yellow walls. Every house I've had has yellow walls. varying degrees. And I don't know, there's something I think about the way that yellow changes with light. And I think it's just really uplifting to me. I just really love that color. I have lots of yellow.
Oh, your kitchen is yellow.
If I have a choice to paint something, my kitchen's yellow. I just like yellow. It just makes me feel happy and I don't overthink it.
You know who loved yellow is Claude Monet. His kitchen was yellow.
Shut up.
I went there and I always remember seeing it. And it was a really powerful experience to walk into a bright yellow kitchen. Yeah, I think it's in Giverny in France. Wow. I remember going from Paris to there. And I think you can travel in a day or something. But if you love yellow, his kitchen's like really good. You should Google it.
Wow. What about you, Christopher? What's your favorite color?
Mine would have to be green. I think green is, I like the feeling of the soothingness. I love to be around. My sitting room is green, like a sort of dusty green. It makes me feel peaceful. It reminds me of nature. I love it. And I think you can...
The walls are green. The walls are a dusty green.
In my sitting room, yeah.
Your sitting room's your living room. That's everyone else's living room.
Is either room? Or.
Or is it separate to your living room?
No, just the one, Russell.
Going back to Monet, he had a balcony off the yellow kitchen or yellow lounge or something.
That was not green. No.
Yeah, when you opened the doors, the green would come in. So actually, it's
Shut
a Homo sapiens
up.
House.
Since this is a crossover episode, have you two ever been asked? And can you please give us your answers?
I've got no idea. Rust, have we been asked?
I want, and I don't even know if it exists, but my fascinations and obsessions vary all the time. There's few consistencies, but the one that I really want is there's an artist called Onkawara who did these date paintings. They're... whatever country of the world he was in, he would make a painting of the date and the day for his whole career. That's all he did. And I want one for my date of birth. And I don't think there is one that exists. If there is one, it's probably looking about $3.5 million. They're so simple and clean and kind of perfect that is something that I would covet that I don't even think exists.
Russell, I know a guy on eBay will do you one for $6.99.
That's what I'm thinking, though. You know what? I'm thinking, well, why not get a fake one? Give me your Chilada guy.
Honey, leave it with me.
Yeah? All right.
Yeah.
14 for November 1981. There you go. See if you can get that made up. That'd be the dream.
Rob?
Mine has always been the same, which is Frida Kahlo's My Birth, which is actually owned by Madonna. So Alan can help me with this one.
Wow.
And it's a really tragic birth for baby where the mother's died. But I've always found that painting to be like so incredibly powerful, and it kind of was a big deal in my teenage years. And when I saw it on loan at Tate many years ago, it was really shocking because it was so tiny in real life. It was like really small, and it wasn't in my head. It was this giant thing, and it was actually... But also, I'm obsessed with Faith Ringgold, who's an African-American artist, and she did a lot of kind of mosaics, I think in one of the stations, maybe in New York, in one of the tube stations, maybe like 125th. And there's all these mosaics of people flying. But I couldn't steal that because it's obviously a... It'd be taking it away from the public, which has to be really...
No.
Steal from Madonna before you steal from the public.
Steal from Madonna instead, yeah.
And colour-wise,
absolutely.
If you're asking colours as well, I guess I'm always gravitating to like a blue, but more like a kind of grey blue or a more slaty blue. Or I remember I went to Donald Judd's house on Spring Street in Soho, New York, which is the most incredible tour if you ever go to New York. Just the minimalism of it, the colours of it, the way he painted the windows and the metalwork was in Battleship grey. And it's beautiful. It's a bluey grey. And when I came back here, I had a paint maker because it was from a brand in America, which you can't get here. And so I found the people here that could then get the coding to make these paints. It's very scientific. And I was able to get the paint made up that was in Donald Judd's house. And now I have it on certain doors and features in my house.
So fancy.
Thank
love
you.
That. Mine is orange. I love the colour orange. And I've always been obsessed with it. And I love wearing orange. It makes me feel super positive. I don't know if it's something to do the way I look at things, but it literally invigorates me.
Well, that's like, isn't it Hare Krishna wear orange all the time?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Am I really Hare Krishna? I didn't know.
There's a religion that's orange is the...
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. They do, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think there's a really amazing Egon Schiele drawing where he was wearing an orange coat, which I really liked.
Oh my God. Talking of Egon Schiele. Oh no, it's not Egon Schiele, but just to wrap up our art fest, I just had to tell you something I did the other day. It's not Schiele, but it's Munch. I made some naans the other day. I cooked some naans. First time ever. I just felt like naans. I thought, I'm going to fucking have naans. I can do it.
He means naan bread, not an old lady.
Yeah, naan bread. Yes.
Right, yeah. I'm like, you cook some old ladies. I'm like, sorry. Put them in the oven. Yeah, like Hansel and Gretel with old people.
So. But so you know when naans, it sort of bubbles up and you have these little circles. When you get a naan, it's got sort of little circles of the darker circles. Yeah, and the other. Well,
like an air bubble.
Yes, air bubbles. But my naan, this one of them looked like Monk's The Scream. It's uncanny.
No, it didn't.
It did.
Wow. I've seen it. It did.
It did. You should look at my Instagram. It was absolutely incredible. This, like the little face of the person actually screaming in the scream. That's what my naan looked like. I've still got it. I haven't eaten it. I've kept it in a box.
What if you gave that? If you call up Madonna and say, "I'll give you Monk's The Scream. I promise it's the real one. Just give me that Frida Kahlo
on a naan bread."
You're not allowed to look at it when you give it to me. Like, just put it on the table, and I'll take my one. You take yours, and then call me if there's any problems.
Yeah,
that would be.
Yeah, I think it's fine. That would be
hilarious. We do a cold swap.
I'll give it a go.
Alan, it's a naan.
It's been such a joy. Thank you so much.
This has been absolutely lovely.
This has been amazing. Thanks, guys.
I love this. It's like having a foursome.
What a lovely chat with two lovely boys. Is everyone now going to go and buy all my favourite art on eBay? I hope not. Anyway, if you haven't yet, go and listen to part one of our chat on the Talk Art podcast feed. Get it from wherever you get your podcasts. I think that's the thing we're supposed to say. Also, while you're there, why not subscribe? They've got so many other brilliant episodes. Talk Art is such a wicked podcast. So proud to have done an episode with them. What a joy. Hope you enjoyed listening. Let us know what you thought. Let us know who your queer art heroes are. We love hearing from you about all of this stuff. Loads of love and thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.